This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. I'm Dave Sagarin. Hurricane Katrina displaced up to 1 million people all around the country, the nation's greatest diaspora to date. One man who fled the Crescent City was Tom Morgan, a former Charlottesville bartender and radio jazz DJ. He's the author of several books on the roots of jazz. He's a radio fixture in New Orleans now, and after Katrina, he was able to continue producing his program for WWOZ, thanks to the internet. When he was in Charlottesville earlier this fall, I spoke with him on the porch of the house where he was staying about how Charlottesville helped him on his quest to become a jazz musicologist and how the sound of New Orleans came to be. This interview was sponsored by George Loper. The Loper website focuses on local issues, political, social, economic, religious. You can find it at george.loper.org. Now, here's my interview with Tom Morgan.
So here we are. It's October the 15th. It's 2:10 in the afternoon. We're talking to Tom Morgan. Hi, Tom. You're here from New Orleans because you're an evacuee?
That I am. Evacuee, IDP, refugee. I answered all of them.
Where do you live in New Orleans?
I live on Elysian Fields, which is one of the main streets that runs from the river to the lake at Burgundy. Everywhere else in the world would be Burgundy, but in New Orleans we like things a little different, so it's Elysian Fields and Burgundy in the Faubourg Marigny.
My goodness, that sounds so lovely. So was your neighborhood underwater?
My neighborhood is one of the oldest, if not the oldest, neighborhood in the city, and they initially built the buildings on the highest ground that they could find. Dirt and sand that had been pushed up by the Mississippi, so it was high ground, so it did not flood, and it had wind damage, certainly. Almost, as I looked around last weekend, I was there, almost every house had a bit of wind damage. I did the work last weekend of cleaning the house a bit, and certainly cleaning the refrigerator, and pulling down some areas where trees and limbs had come down. The city needs us, and the city needs people, and it needs our money, and it needs us to be there, and since we survived so well, we need to be there to help out our friends and our city.
I've heard that you have quite an extensive collection of old records and sheet music and stuff, but that survived okay?
It did, to my knowledge. I haven't inspected everything closely. The records seem to have done well. The sheet music had no visible signs or of any kind of mildew. My collection of CDs, I had covered some of the New Orleans music CDs. They all seemed to be fine, just like I left them. Some of them might have gotten a little damp, but I'm not worried about it at this point.
That's good. In New Orleans, your major activity is on the radio as a jazz expert and lover and historian and so forth.
I do two shows, one that revolves around New Orleans music, whether it was from the 1920s or whether it's the latest music. It's without genres, so it could be blues or jazz, gospel or folk, singer-songwriter or brass band. Any music that has come out of the Crescent City is covered. And then Jazz Roots is more of what I call edutainment, some educational entertainment. And even in the land of jazz, in the beginnings of jazz in New Orleans, there's a lot of people that don't know the history of it and really appreciate learning about it.
Yeah, and that's on WWOZ.
WWOZ, now in its 15th year, relatively young in the community stations. Our license is owned by the Jazz and Heritage Foundation, which produces the jazz festival, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. We're in the process of building new studios. We're located in Armstrong Park, but we've outgrown our setting, and we were in the process of building. I don't really know what Katrina has done to those plans. Certainly stalled them at the very least.
Right now, people can listen to WWOZ on the internet. Is that correct?
Yes, and we were really, as a station, only down about 3 or 4 days, Our stream was hosted, and it has been hosted by WFMB, which is out of near New York City in Jersey City, New Jersey, and they hosted our broadcast, and people have been sending in air checks or tapes of shows for inclusion, and I...
Well, where can people find that on the internet?
At wwoz.org.
That's great. How did you get interested in jazz in the first place?
Well, you know, sometimes when I interview people, I ask them for their first musical memory. And I think certainly mine was listening to Betty Boop cartoons. The Betty Boop cartoons, not only was Betty herself such a figure, but Cap Calloway did Betty Boop cartoons, Louis Armstrong, and I fell in love with the music, not really knowing much about it, but it was just a large part of my childhood. You know, I've certainly gone back and rediscovered my roots. You know, certainly something else that was, in my college years in 1972, I got a chance to see Duke Ellington perform. And I had never seen any person or group have the stage presence that he had, and really fell in love with his sounds. Lived here in Charlottesville, I was asked to, if I was interested in doing local radio. I was a bartender at the time, and the program director had a thought of putting together three bartenders and splitting the show up and letting them each have a show every third week. I did my first show, and it was a theme show of all songs about liquor, and what else would a bartender do? And after 2 months, I was the only one left. And continued to do radio here until I left. So it was about 18 years of radio here. Developed it into two shows. Really taught myself the music. I have no formal background in musicology. I had the fortune to be in the restaurant business and then decide to try and write, and wrote columns locally for the Seville Weekly on reviews, and put together a book proposal, which immediately got some interest in the early 90s, and the book did real well. It was put out not only in hardcover but in paperback, and was runner-up, second place in the Ralph Gleason Music Book Awards.
What's the name of that book?
It's called From Cakewalks to Concert Halls. It's an illustrated history of African-American popular music from 1895 to 1920. A long title, but it really explains. It's pre-jazz. It's America. Popular song is written by Black Americans who were, and in a sense, street music was colorblind. You know, Jane Q. Public was the one who was buying the sheet music for the house. She was the piano player in the house, and if there wasn't a black and white photo of the songwriter on the cover, Mrs. America had no idea who wrote it. And so, in a sense, it was a great breakthrough for some of the African American performers, and as performers as well as songwriters. And I became interested in this and kept going further back, and realized that no one had really ever written about these people, and other than during the Times, there would be a paragraph or a half of a chapter about the Negro songwriters, you know. And so it was a chance to put together profiles of 10 great songwriters and songwriting teams, and illustrate them with the sheet music that I collected.
Jazz primarily came out of those black writers and performers of that time, or what? I've heard that there are many roots to jazz.
There are, and that's really a good way to put it. My concept of the beginnings of jazz have changed and morphed over the last 15 years. Certainly when I was writing about and focusing in on the New York City roots of jazz, which was the hub of Tin Pan Alley, the popular music world, I felt that there were strong roots there. Sometimes it's called Eastern Ragtime, the piano, stride piano players of James P. Johnson and certainly U.B. Blake from Baltimore, James P. Johnson and his students like Fats Waller, but also C. Luckyeth Roberts, known as Lucky Roberts, and Willie the Lion Smith, very colorful figures of that era, as well as the great James Reese Europe. Europe was out of Mobile, Alabama, grew up with his family in Washington, D.C., but he eventually moved to New York City around 1902, and he was one of the orchestral leaders of the early Black Broadway plays. And in the late early teens, he put together what was a part fraternal organization and part booking agency called the Clef Club. And at the same time, he was the band leader for Vern and Irene Castle, who were the very famous dancers at that time. A movie was certainly made about them, but the band leader was somehow white in the movie, but they danced to black rhythms. So I call Mr. James Reese Europe the father of orchestral jazz. One of the reasons you don't hear about James Reese Europe today was he died tragically on stage in 1919 after returning from a wonderful performances as a band leader during World War I. He returned to a triumphant tour in the United States only to be stabbed by his drummer on stage and then dying shortly thereafter from the stab wound. He was a strict taskmaster, and I guess had told the drummer to sit down and not move one too many times. But certainly Duke Ellington remembered James Reese Europe in Duke Ellington's book, Music is My Mistress, as somebody that influenced him. And James Reese Europe had a dream of bringing Black Broadway back. Black Broadway disappeared in 1910. And it really disappeared into the black communities. It's also is on the road with the smart companies and traveling shows. But as far as a presence back on Broadway, like it had from 1902 to say 1908, 1909, it was not until 1921 when Noble Sissel and Eubie Blake put together Shuffling Along. And Noble Sissel and Eubie Blake were both members of James Reese Europe's Clef Club and both carried on the vision of James Reese Europe. So I had a strong feeling in the history of jazz in New York. Now, when I got to New Orleans, I certainly was cognizant of King Oliver and of the great clarinet tradition of Sidney Bechet and Jimmy Noon, Johnny Dodds, the great drummers of Paul Barbaran in the city, and of course the great trumpeters. Not only King Oliver, but the very greatest Louis Armstrong. But it took a while of being down there and studying and realizing that New Orleans had its own contribution, and certainly was very important to jazz, and that was group improvisation. It had a way of dealing with ragtime music through group improvisation that really nowhere else did. And when they performed it in Chicago, it amazed people. It was an integrated club in Chicago that they were playing, which was something that was not happening in New York City, certainly not happening for the most part in the Crescent City. But with the traditions in the Crescent City of street performances as well as groups trading members, you know, the group improvisations just grew naturally out of that, and it became very much a force in jazz. The problem was that it really was only a force in jazz for the first 10 years, and then jazz moved on and morphed into swing and into other things, and eventually the music during a nostalgic era became known as Dixieland, which is the way the white people played it, in the revival period of the 40s, they began to discover that there were still black musicians in New Orleans that had played that music. Now, the blues is interesting because blues is older than jazz, and there's certainly a bit of blues in jazz. A lot of people would point to the Delta area as some of the roots of the blues, but my feeling, and in a future book is something that I have begun to work on, that the blues appeared in New Orleans every bit as early as it did in Memphis. In 1902, Emmett Kennedy, who wrote a book called Mellows, talks about the Algiers dock workers singing the blues. Jelly Roll Morton talks about Mamie Desdoom in 1902 singing songs like Mamie's Blues. Make Me a Pallet on the Floor, they always said, was a favorite song of Buddy Bolden, you know, who some would say was the first jazz musician. I kind of dispute that thought. He was certainly an early improviser. But the blues were part of his repertoire. And if you would look at the city of Baton Rouge, has got a much earlier blues and a harder, more country blues feel than New Orleans. So I think that they're... the one thing with jazz is we don't know everything. It's just only really, really in the last 30, 40, 50 years that people have begun to study jazz, and there is a lot to learn. And certainly blues the same way.
And then another thing that I've heard as one of the roots for the jazz feeling is the actual going back to Africa, back to the African.
Well, and certainly that's one thing that New Orleans had that no other place did have, and that was a place called Congo Square. And if there is a sacred ground in the Crescent City related to music, it is certainly Congo Square. Congo Square, certainly with the Spanish and the French roots in New Orleans, they had different ways of looking at slaves. And they weren't afraid of the slaves having drums, and in a sense, Congo Square was created as an area where the slaves could practice their religions and could play their instruments.
Get away from that boy before the wild men get you.
Surrounded by the genteel Crescent City people who on a Sunday afternoon would have a picnic and watch the savages sing and dance, but it was a place where the African element in African American life could continue to exist into the middle 1800s. We also have the influx of Haitians in the early 1800s, which added a bit of what Jelly Roll Morton would later call that Spanish tinge to the music. We also had a large Creole population who were a bit more of upper-class folks, and they were sending their children to Europe, to musical schools in Europe. So you put this all together, and it really was a fertile area for African-American music.
Well, it's been great talking to you, and I wish you absolutely the best as you, get back to New Orleans and get your life back on track down there.
So. Yeah. I know, the radios and the music of New Orleans, I think a lot of people know a lot more about New Orleans now than they did before. Now they need to know the music and hear about our culture, so I think there will be an even greater audience for what I'm doing, and I think it will have even greater importance, and I look forward to taking the next step in the new New Orleans.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
You've been listening to an interview with jazz musicologist Tom Morgan, who fled his beloved New Orleans to escape Hurricane Katrina and called Charlottesville once more home. Tom is now back at work at WWOZ. Take a listen at www.wwoz.org. This podcast is a production of the Charlottesville Podcasting Network and is sponsored by George Loper. I'm Dave Sagarin. Thanks for listening.